Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Jules, we're so ill. Both me and you, mate.
I know. It's like, we were so excited last week to be like, the UBP is reaching its final one for the year, 2023 UBP. And now it's just like, oh my God.
I tell you what though, like, shout out to everybody listening to this who's currently ill, because there's something to do. Every time you say you're ill, someone will, from the generation above us, will lean in the door and say, you know, something's going around. But something is literally going around right now. Because the amount of people that are ill.
I'm just saying, there was like a big thing that went around a couple of years ago, and just because we're not talking about it now doesn't mean that it has actually disappeared. So there's a lot of people getting double sick over from one and then leading into like a seasonal flu or cold. Like, I'm just saying, the conspiracy is that it's still here.
Thankfully, when I did the COVID test, still coming back negative. And I had about a week and a half of just like a general scratchy throat thing. Yeah. That was like, went away, and I was like, cool, I've got energy again. Still sound bad, but I've got energy again. I can record stuff, and then like did all that stuff. And then this morning, I'm like, did I just catch something else? Catch another thing.
And that's the worst thing about it, isn't it? Is that like I can put up with an illness if the head is in the game. But if I'm not getting enough oxygen to my brain in order to think properly, it's so annoying. Like, I had a moment last night where I almost wanted to just get like, you know what? I wonder what would happen if I just physically disfigured myself and chopped my nose off so I could actually get access to my nasal passages properly. Could I live with that? And I was like, I'm that annoyed with not being able to breathe that, I could see that as a future possibility.
Yeah, that was my thing the other day where I was just so annoyed at my own head. I was just like, can you just F off for a bit? Like, I'm sick of just having this stupid bung feeling.
And then there's cold or flu-y Scott in your head just going like, no.
I've got to stay here.
I do apologise, by the way, to all of the audience members who'll be listening who may catch the errant sniffs and coughs from Scott and I today. Like, we don't mean it, and I apologize, because it is not like it, like, it's less ASMR and more ASMR. You guys okay?
Yeah. Are you still alive? Yeah. I think, like, hopefully there's some sort of weird twisted communal side to this where I guarantee you, like, some portion of the audience will also be ill
anyway. But, you should probably tell people who we are, what we're doing, and what we're on about.
They know. But also, yes, I'm Scott Taylor. That's Jules Gill. This is the Entitled Banter podcast, the UBP, the UBP, UBP,
the UBP, UBP.
Where we take people's questions, talking points, etc. Now, I forgot to put the tweet out to get fresh questions, but we got tons from the previous weeks, and we always have loads because everybody's lovely anyway, so lots to get through.
Forgot or carefully orchestrated to make sure that no one felt left out. I prefer the latter, my friend.
That was the plan all along. Yeah. I'm Santa Claus in it. That was the goodwill for all. But we'll get through as many questions as we can. We'll see how long we survive. Probably about half an hour.
We can do it.
We can get there. Question from George Jackson, who says, festive greetings. I finally finished Spider-Man 2 and it was glorious. But now that we're at the end of the year, what release or rumored release are you most looking forward to next year?
Oh, that's a tough one. Do you know what, actually? I know what it is, but I know it's a contentious one, because it's going to be Palworld. Now, the reason why I've chosen that game is because, and I'm not drawing comparisons to Palworld and The Day Before. I'm just saying, right, that you've got a game studio that promised a lot and under-delivered immensely, right? Now, Palworld is promising even more than the facets that The Day Before was promising. Now, I'm not saying that they are in any way, shape or form the same type of thing. I'm just so fascinated by a game that is promising to be an MMO RPG with survival and building elements that is also Pokemon, that is also a shooter. Like, that, to me, if it comes off, it will be like we were saying before about the Ubisoft taking one aspect and turning it to the perfect form. It could be the game of 2023, 2024, but it does also stand the risk of collapsing in on itself, because that is way too many elements for a first time developer to really be pushing. But you know what? I wish them the best. I want it to succeed.
The thing with that is that it's so nakedly the stitched together parts. Like it's Pokemon plus guns plus all the like the open world arbitrary stuff.
To quote CM Punk, mate, where's the lie when it comes to what's the bad thing about that? Because I want to play that game.
Tell me when I'm telling lies. Feel like, I mean, I don't know. That was one of those things where when they first showed it, I couldn't believe it was real. I remember you showed me the trailer of it, being like, look, it's like a weird Snorlax-looking thing with a couple of twin Uzis. And I was like, yeah, sure, why not? I can't think of many things off the top of my head that are rumoured for next year. I'm definitely psyched for Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, just because I need to know what the hell they're doing with the story. Yeah. And I don't know if I trust them. Did you play the remake in 2020?
No, I haven't, actually. It's like one of those things where it's on my big list of games to play, but unfortunately, Scott, you know me, I will take, like, if somebody comes up to me and says, hey, Jules, do you want to play this, like, fascinating console or PC breaker that is everyone's going mad about? And I'll be like, nah, I'd rather play an indie game from 1993, right, mate. Like just, like, I'm just stuck in my way. I've got my, what is it, like, £3,000 rig that workers, like, set us up with. And I'm playing, like, bloody point-and-click adventures on good old games. Like,
he's getting the best version of Asteroids going that he possibly
you
can.
You best believe I am.
It's got to be done. But I think for Final Fantasy VII, the remake, they changed loads of stuff with the story towards the end, and it's very much in No Man's territory right now. No Man's Land territory, and I don't know what they're going to do with it, and I kind of just need to know. There's so much money
live. If that's the thing we're skirting around, Aerith will live in this.
If you've not played it, there's like they go so far with like breaking the entire timeline open and doing all these different things.
But you know what? I actually have a bit of a problem with that. And I'm not saying that this cannot like end out in like an amazing story. But because everyone expects Aerith to die, right? The fact that she's going to live, like, there is the hands down, because she, even in the promotional trailer, it's like, save me. It's like, it's so obvious that they're going to do the bait and switch here. Uh-huh. But the problem is that Final Fantasy VII really has super impetus because of the fact you lose such a beloved party member. Yep. If we end up going through this game without having the death that spurs us on in order to actually, you know, take down Sephiroth and actually feel like you took away Cloud's love interest, his one true love, and
it's
like,
Tifa for me, but you know,
I know it's that's kind of like how it shakes out. But at the end of the day, if they do that, then it's going to be like, oh, well, where's the actual drive of the story? It's just another big bad who wants to destroy the world. It's not a personal tale as much. I mean, yeah, it's part of their backstory about that they were Soldier together, but it doesn't have the same impetus. It doesn't.
No, there's a whole weird thing with all that stuff. Like, by the time you get to the end of the remake, they've shaken that stuff up so much, and Aerith herself is kind of like aware of the new timeline she's in, and it's like, it's all really weird. And so, like, I don't know, the fact that it was Tetsuya Nomura who's putting it together, who's the Kingdom Hearts guy, it all felt very Kingdom Hearts. And then, you know, going into this new one, he has stepped back. I think he's very much still involved in the project. Yeah. And I wonder how much he sketched out initially anyway. But he doesn't have as much oversight as he did before. So I don't know what the rest of the team do with it. But that's my most anticipated game off the top of my head. And I just, for me, I'm curious just what, like, the future of Sony is. I want more new IP. I want to see what they're doing. Like, we're getting Death Stranding 2, but that's like a third-party thing. Yeah. And I think overall, it's that we haven't had, you know, we know Wolverine's coming. It was leaked last week or whatever, for in-game screenshots and stuff. But I want to know what the first-party teams are doing. As we're recording this, there was very recently Naughty Dog just said they're cancelling Last of Us multiplayer.
That's gone, yeah.
Which, like, is a really interesting thing, because, like, that only confirms what I always thought anyway, that all the live service push was a Jim Ryan thing, Jim Ryan stepping down, all those, because it's in the wording of that announcement where they say, if we did this, we'd have to, it would impact our single-player games. And it's like, you're phrasing that in such a way that it's exactly what people like me want to hear, where you should be focusing on your single player stuff. And so I wonder, like, what's Naughty Dog doing next? Do they have a new IP to announce? Are they getting the studio back on track? You know, what are the rest of those first party teams doing?
It may be that, like, because obviously you've got to think that companies operate on, like, I'm only using this for, like, the printing business. It's like a 180-day cycle. Like, if you make changes to a book, you have, like, to wait another 180 days almost to get it, like, a new version of that book out there. Mm-hmm. Now, I imagine that the same thing is true of the video game industry, because they're such monumental projects and such. They can't pivot as quickly as, like, as you might think. And I do wonder if, like, us seeing the remastered versions of The Last of Us 1 and Part 2, when people are like, this is such a cynical cash grab, if those were, like, projects going down a list, and then the last one before Jim Ryan left effectively was the multiplayer one, and that's like, okay, finally we can action this and take it off this, and now we're starting with a clean slate again. Like, it's almost like you'd taken things so far with the other ones that they couldn't have stopped them at that point anyway.
Well, it's like there's no more blood from that stone. Like, you've remastered Last of Us Part 2 3 years after it came out, and it's like, and the side-by-sides look exactly the same. I think for the factions multiplayer thing, you know, they've said that if they wanted to do it, they'd have to support years worth of additions and updates and everything, which they said that it's not going to do, and that comes after Bungie apparently did an internal review where they said it wasn't going to work, but then Bungie had layoffs and they didn't hit their targets. They were 50% or 40% off revenue. So the whole live service wing of Sony just seems like a mess right now. It's like, you guys need to stick to your strengths.
Do you know what? It's a really smart decision, though, I think, of them to actually can this and not just push ahead for watch it like flounder and then die. Because with the like recent additions to Fortnite with like and, you know,
Fortnite is the weirdest thing now, by the way. I don't know if you've seen it.
That's the thing. Credit where credit is due. It isn't just the game that you think it is. It is now every game. It is now everything. It is all encompassing. And you know what? From what I've seen of it, I've never played it before. I've never ever, like, I think I've done one game and I was like, cool. I immediately see
what
this is.
Well, nothing for Fortnite.
I've played a lot of it
in 2017 when it first dropped.
How do I put this, man? Like, I feel like I have begrudging respect for Fortnite because I don't like the building aspect of it. I don't like how when I watch gameplay footage of it, I'm like, this is just too far beyond me. I like watching people play like the non-build stuff, and like if it's on, I'll like sit down and be like, okay, cool, I'll see how this goes. But now they've added in so many modes, so many ways to play, so many skins, so many tie-ins, so many of the, I'm just like, you know what, absolutely fair play. They haven't just gone through to the market and been like, hey, look, here's a cynical cash grab sort of thing. They've just gone, nah, screw it. We're going to make the game that is everything for everyone.
Oh, and, man, it's like, you look at where they started in 2017 as like a PUBG, literally a PUBG ripoff. They announced it saying, we love PUBG, we've made a Battle Royale mode. And then they, the real genius of it, and it is, you've got to give them their flowers to some point. Like, they were then able to capitalize on that hype and then keep going and keep going and keep
evolved.
Going.
They just went.
Yeah, and it's like, and
they set the trends now that every other game is trying to pursue. And because they keep on hiring in some of the best directors, the best software engineers, the best designers, they end up with these modes that people just go, you can do what in this?
Yeah.
Like, we had a sit-down chat with, so it was the like the staff night out the other day. We were like having a chat with them and they were just bringing up everything that was in Fortnite. And I was like, sorry, what? There's Rock Band in Fortnite? And
yeah, I ended up redownloading
it. My mind, because I was just like, that actually sounds amazing. That sounds really fun.
It's a really weird beat, right? Because they've got, like, when you, because I feel like I download Fortnite once every year or so just to see what the hell's going on with it, just out of raw curiosity. I don't love the way it plays. Like, if I was going to play, like, a multiplayer game of PvP, I would play, like, a Call of Duty, a Titanfall, or a Halo. Halo Infinite, by the way, super, another segue. Halo Infinite's phenomenal again. Like, it's been a little while, but they've added loads to it. They've refined the hell out of it.
He's died.
The network code and everything.
Oh, sorry. So he, Scott experienced a massive like spike. Oh, lag spike. I can't get my words out. My brain's mush. Now, on my end, you started waxing lyrical about Halo Infinite, and then you froze like all of the Bungie haters or the studio.
They're all coming to get me.
Yeah.
No, yeah, Halo Infinite is legit incredible again. It's like they've added loads to it. The new firefight mode is phenomenal. Okay. That's all I've been playing every other night. But yeah, Fortnite, though, downloaded that thing because I was like, I want to see what's going on about it. And yeah, when you go into it, you get a really big launcher and you can launch regular Fortnite from this. It looks like a Netflix homepage.
Yeah, but
now
it's like tons of different channels, effectively.
Yeah, literally. And it's like, and you can do, there's like Fortnite Lego. I'm going to sound like an old man here, but there's so many different things you can go on. But also, they have Rock Band is just in there. Yeah. It's called like Fortnite
Festival
Performance or something. Festival, yeah.
But what
then they've got like a racing mode as well.
I love the fact that it is everything for everyone. And like, it's, I mean, it's a bit dangerous when you end up with these sort of oligopoly, monopoly of power in this sense, where like every person plays it because it's got everything and they become so reliant on it that they can start just saying, hey, look, now you're going to pay through the nose for it.
Well, it kind of just is the idea of the metaverse at this point. It's, I mean, the thing is, like, I think it's impressive. I didn't love my time. I deleted it again. Like, I don't love my time with it. I think the variety of what's there was cool, but also it's like, hey, do you want to randomly play a bit of Rock Band or a bit of an arcade racing game and then a bit of a battle royale? And I'm like, sure. But it's like, it still feels like it bottoms out because it becomes the metaverse thing where it's like, you're not actually nailing any one of these anymore.
For me, it's like, it's the skill ceiling. Like, the actual barrier to entry for this game, for me, coming in now as a fresh player is so high that I know that I will be absolutely destroyed again and again and again. And I won't have fun because I won't be feeling like I'm actually entering into a level playing field. Like everyone has played this game 4 years at this point, and then there's Muggins over here who doesn't know what the gimmick is. So I won't.
Right, right.
I'll be like, oh, at least with like a Call of Duty or a Battlefield, I can pick up a gun, I can aim down the sights, I can hopefully squeak out a victory. But here, it's like the building, the constant use of abilities, the knowledge of the map inside out to go to specific spawn points, being able to be shot out of the air before you even land. It's just like, okay, like I guess I'm having fun.
The build, that's the thing. That's why they brought that no-build mode in, because the building side of it, when you watch someone who knows how to build in Fortnite, their camera's all over the place and they build a fortress.
It makes you physically sick, man. I look at it and I'm just like, I can't deal with this. Anyway, like we've been going on about Fortnite a lot already, and I'm sure that the people here who love the UBP are just going like, that's brilliant, Jules. Two old men who have a dislike for Fortnite. What a surprise.
I do think it's like to round that out, I do think it's the harbinger of what every other platform is aiming for. Call of Duty HQ, Assassin's Creed Infinity, they're all trying to become the big platform. And I think if you look at the way Fortnite's laid out, even if you just download it to see what it looks like it is free, that is what they're aiming for. They want to have these big platforms, these big channels that you just pick stuff off and load into other games from there.
100%, just a final point on this, is that is the direction that Battlefield should be taking, because it can't compete with Call of Duty on its own merits. It's not an arcade Twitch shooter, despite its sort of like moving towards it in recent times, and it botched 2049 so bad when it came out because of the fact that it just wasn't that sci-fi shooter that everyone wanted, and it was just poorly optimized.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
So why don't they just bring out Battlefield as the like a hub, and you plug in eras and dates from old maps, and then you just have that as Battlefield is a living, breathing like online war shooter.
You just call it Battlefield, it's just a free download.
Because Call of Duty has got like the Warzone, it's got that. That's its specific thing. Battlefield doesn't have an identity in this current era, so it basically go, look, we're just going to grab all the popular maps from way back in the day, 3-4, Battlefield 1, what 1940, whatever, and we're going to put them into different map packs and let you all play. It uses the same mechanics, it uses the same this across the entire board. Go.
Well, that's kind of what the Hitman became. Like, it was Hitman's just a
episodic
platform
that becomes something else.
And it's like now it's just this big thing where you can leap into anyone. There's like tons of maps that are on there now. Yeah. And same with Master Chief, the Master Chief Collection for Halo. Like, that just has all of Halo in it right now.
Yeah, and like, so the Hitman one, for example, great, great point, is it just is. You don't ever need another Hitman game. You plug into the existing formula because it has perfected its own genre. Like, it is.
I remember like when they re-released it, it's like the whole world of assassination thing. Yeah. It's like Hitman's genuinely incredibly impressive now. Like, I always really liked that 2016 one since then, but they've only built on it and built on it. And then now if you get Hitman, you do get this big like plug-in platform thing where you get tons of levels and tons of different missions and everything. But yeah, it's interesting seeing where things are going. I think that'll be something that comes into the fore across next year. How many questions have we done? One.
Yep.
Second
classic.
Question from Paul McSoul, who says, howdy lads. So Alan Wake 2 has got me very much into Old Gods of Asgard, aka Poets of the Fall, and I'm really digging it. What's the last game that made you do a deep dive into a musical artist's catalogue? He also says, that was a question when Andy Murray was on the other week. He was asking if Jake the Snake still wrestles or am I ancient? Jake the Snake is with AEW, but he doesn't wrestle.
He does not wrestle. He does not wrestle. And forever he will be etched into my mind for Heroes of Wrestling, where he squeezed his, supple man breasts together and got a person in the audience to touch them. It was a low point for his career, but
I've never seen this, but I also don't want to.
Don't. It's like watching a man who is absolutely off his bin, just going like it's not a fun experience, and it's just a wow, this is as low as you can go. But
that's
I'm
great.
Just happy for him now that he's the DDP came and helped him out. Legend. Yeah. Go back to the original question. A video game whose soundtrack pushed you to go explore their other works. For me, it's Darren Korb. Anything from is it Supergiant? Supergiant Games.
From Transistor and Bastion.
I always get them so confused with Supergiant, Supermassive.
Yes,
so,
same.
But I remember playing Bastion and going, wow, that soundtrack's amazing. And it became one of my most played albums of the year of release. And as soon as Transistor came out, I was like immediately downloading that. When Pi came out, immediately downloaded that. I was just like, boom, 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 anything from there. So yeah, it kind of sparked my love for, like, I don't even know what genre music it is, like alternate ambient. I don't even know.
No, I mean, I think I was thinking of like, because my go-to is nearly always just synthwave stuff, and like discovering Carpenter Brute through Hotline Miami, and then getting locked, because he didn't have that much stuff out by then, but the Trilogy album, it's just a collection of EPs. That thing's phenomenal.
I'm pointing at you because you sold me Midnight Fight Express on the strength of that soundtrack.
Oh, and that's Noise Cream. Noise Cream's incredible.
Belter soundtrack, that. So, and I got into a lot more synthwave stuff because of that. Ended up going down the sort of like, is it like synth step?
It's so,
I don't know,
like,
it's like heavy, like,
yeah, I was gonna say it's more metally. You need to check out Dance with the Dead. They've not been on I don't think any games yet, but Dance with the Dead are a full-on heavy metal synth band where it's just like they have a particular album called Love to Death that was just really chunky and like riffy and whatever, but it's also super synthy, and it's awesome. I got massively into Tomoyo Otani across the pandemic, who's one of the like well-known sort of Sega composers, did Sonic Frontier stuff. Like, the Sonic music has never missed. That franchise has been all over the place, but the music's always bang on, whether it's like cheesy surf rock stuff or the really like fun electronic stuff. And also there's a dude, it's a weird artist name, it's Sanog, it's like Sanodg, like Sanodg. I don't know what the real dude's name is, but he did one of the Tekken soundtracks back in the day.
Soundtrack.
Well, that's just, ooh, that stuff's awesome. The guy that I was following was like the Tekken Tag composer.
Okay.
But his like pseudonym or his like artist name is like this Sanog thing. And if you search Sanodg, you find this album called Brightness. And it's this really fun, like, sort of throwback, like, I mean, I guess it was released a few years ago, but like early 2000s kind of track. And it reminds me a lot of the music that was on the Matrix soundtracks.
Oh, nice.
And it's just, it's really well put together, but it's a very specific time. I think you kind of had to grow up with it to a point. But if you like the sound of the Tekken Tag soundtrack, which I very much do, it's like a whole album of stuff like that.
Nice.
So I think my main one's going to be synth, but I think like overall, we've got a good selection of stuff.
I definitely fell down the the cyberpunk hole as well. Yes. Because obviously Bomb Rush Cyberpunk, when that came out, I was like looking into all of the artists that featured onto that soundtrack, because it wasn't just, and I'm really sorry, I'm going to forget the name, but there was the original composer, Hidetaka Nakayama, is that right? I may have completely
butchered
that.
I know who you mean, but I forget the guy's full name.
He's amazing and did the soundtrack for Jet Set Radio and Jet Set Radio Future.
Right.
He composed two tracks or one track for Bomb Rush Cyberpunk, and it was amazing. But all of the other artists on there, I was like, at first I was a bit disappointed because I wasn't getting like his work. But then I went and explored all of them and found that there was a person called, I think it's Too Mellow, and they have a soundtrack. And I think I sent it to you, which was called
Songs
of Future Tokyo. And it's a whole album. And my God, that album or that thing that is on YouTube is amazing. It's one of my most viewed or listened to things while I'm working at the moment.
Yeah, so I mean, fun. It's like... instrumental stuff, electronic stuff. When I was younger, I was always just, it was just rock, it was just metal. Like, I wasn't that bothered about it. And then it would have been from Hotline Miami onwards. So that's like 2012, 2013. Yeah. Started getting way more into this, like, really well done, like, heavy dance or heavy electronic or heavy synthwave or, like, something. I mean, even then it can be lighter, but, like, that's stuff that really goes for it. Like, if you like big, chunky synthwave, that Noise Cream guy is phenomenal.
Yeah.
The Midnight Fight Club?
Fight Express.
That's the one. That stuff's awesome. Question from Willie Araya, who says, in one sentence, do an annual review of the big three, PlayStation, Nintendo, and Xbox. If you wish, elaborate. Have a nice weekend. Oh, also, he asked how many podcasts are left for the year. Well, we have one. We have this podcast today that we're getting through, and I'm pre-recording as long as my head doesn't give out. One more thing today that has been pre-recorded for the holidays. But that's it. We're largely winding down for the year.
Yeah.
Just ravaged by illness across the board and people not being available. But we're doing what we can. And yeah, I think the last one will be the one that I'm recording later today that'll be going out in the holidays. And then we'll resume, I think it'll be the second week of January or maybe the end of the first week of January, something like that.
Okay.
But it'll be in January anyway.
Nice. In terms of the big three, are like a year in review for them.
If I just said PlayStation in 2023 to you.
Yeah, go on then. Well, just that.
That's
just
what I'm saying. If I was like, PlayStation in 2023, what do you think?
I mean... PSVR 2. No. I'm just having to think. I have to collect my thoughts. A lot of stuff to have. Positive steps by changing of command. PSVR 2 is great, if not very expensive.
I forgot that existed. Yep.
Poor peripheral decisions with the PS Portal. Amazing first party games. Not enough of them.
That's fair. I think for me, it would be rediscovery. Ooh. I think that they tried to dump the, I can't do this in one sentence basically, but I think they tried to keep going with the live service push. They tried to convince everybody that that was the thing.
Yeah.
And I think that the stuff we were mentioning earlier about, you know, I'm waiting to see what they're doing next year. I think that all the different things that they tried to push for this year led to The Last of Us multiplayer being cancelled and then realizing that they need to go back to single player stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that Jim Ryan, as much as he's a great businessman, he's made them a ton of money and he navigated through the pandemic and everything, I don't think he's a fit as a head of a gaming brand in the same way that like a Doug Bowser is on Nintendo or Shigeru Miyamoto or Phil Spencer is over on Xbox. I just don't think he fits as well as the competition. But I think overall they've kind of had to just realize what they can't go for. And as much as the single player identity was something that came from the PS4 era, and I think they've realized that like that's their thing, that they can't just cash in on the live service stuff. Nintendo, business as usual. Very little first party stuff, but you had Pikmin 4, you've got Fire Emblem.
Super Mario RPG as well, Mario Odyssey.
What am I talking about? You've got Mario Wonder, you've got Zelda Tears of the Kingdom.
I'd say that they've had an excellent year for first party titles. People are chomping at the bit for the new Switch that's been rumoured for over a year at this point now. So I feel like 2024 is going to be the year that they pull the trigger on, and this is my big prediction of the year. Their new console will be a VR-only console. And I know, that sounds like it's absolutely
that'd be horrible.
Mad. No. That's what it's going to be. Because think about it this way. We have moved from consoles that you had in your living room. Then they got smaller. Uh-huh. Then they got more portable. Now they got more refined. And I think that the Switch 2 is going to come out. And it's going to be accompanied by a VR headset style thing that was the weird cardboard?
I was just going to say, the Nintendo Labo.
That was the tester for it. And then they're going to move into the full VR
market.
Because they have realized, above all else, that graphics do not matter. matter because they have always had the lowest spec'd hardware out there. They are going to go instead into a full VR showcase, and that's going to make it the most affordable, the most comfortable, the best one, because they are a toy maker at heart, and this is what it's going to be. That is my big, bold prediction.
That would be horrible, but I would like to see them do that. And the thing is, as someone who has or had a Nintendo Labo and had their VR extension to that, where you just slot the Switch into a cardboard sleeve and strap it to your head, it worked well enough. But like, I don't want Nintendo to just do VR only. How would they do side-scrolling Mario?
I just think that may be how they do things. I don't know why.
I have no idea
what I'm basing this on. Just a gut feeling, but I just think to myself that they are the people that will be able to take VR to the next level.
That is fair enough. I think for Xbox, I can't do it. My one sentence would just be, "What the hell are you guys doing?"
No, but they've had a good year for years anyway.
I don't know. I don't think Game Pass is it. I don't think Game Pass is like, you know, single-handedly being the thing that everybody's flocking to Xbox for. Like this year, we saw their sales only get worse in Europe. There was a whole thing about how the market share, I'm sure they only have 20% of the market share, and it's not working. For the love of God, just put some games out. Phil Spencer, now, even earlier this year, was saying it's not about the games. It clearly is.
Well, he said it's not about the games before you then sunk an absolute country's net worth onto buying every single publisher worth a damn and working with the rest. So they're 2023, if you said that the PlayStation was about rediscovering, this one here is basically just preparation for 2024, because they're going to release a slew of games with all of their new publishers under their belts, and they'll just be like, cool, right, you said we didn't have any first party titles across this year, now we have all of your favorites.
You would think so. I mean, they've been buying stuff up for like 5 years or whatever.
I feel
now.
Like they bought the biggest of the big boys this year.
Yeah. Well, it'll take ages before, or a little while before the Activision stuff shakes out, like until they meaningfully change the cadence of Call of Duty or whatever. But then you've still got, what's the next project from Double Fine? Like, what's in the works from Undead Labs and people like that? I think it's a state of decay for them. But like, you know, yeah, what have you finally got after 5, 6, 7 years of buying people back then and then telling them, okay, you can do whatever you want. What's your dream project? And go from there. But yeah, I think it's been a weird year for gaming. Tons of different releases, but I think the big three are still navigating the post-pandemic world to a degree. Last question, very super simple question, as me and Jules are both dying. Question from Mike T, who says, what do you think Max Payne 1 and 2 will look like now? They're both being remade, which actually, that might drop next year for all we know.
What do you mean by what do they look like now? I mean, I can see what they look like now. I can go onto my old consoles and play them. What do you mean? Like, as in, like, how are they going to feel when the remake comes out?
I took this question to be like, what do you do with those original two games if you're re-rendering them and doing them in the Northlight engine? Because they've said they're fully remaking them. Yeah. They're going to be in the Alan Wake 2 engine.
And I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be absolutely amazing, because this was the game that popularized bullet time shooting in like third-person action games. So to go back and show people how they did it would be amazing. However, I do think that they need to remember above all else that the reason that Max Payne 3 succeeded so well was because it had very intuitive level design. It constantly kept you moving through spaces that maybe didn't necessarily feel like a normal human built them, but it was like, okay, cool, here's a great shooting area, here's a great sort of like office space to shoot and destroy stuff around. So I reckon that they're going to focus on big destructible action set piece scenery stuff, and I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, man, Max Payne 3 did that stuff really, really well. Yeah. Like, also, shout out to Max Payne 3. That game always gets overlooked. Yeah. And like, it's not my favorite of the trilogy by far. It's just a different tone, but I love what 3 is. I think considering that, because you've not played Alan Wake 2 yet, I don't think.
No, I haven't, no.
Right, because like, they do a whole thing with, they don't mention him by name, but like, they do a whole thing with Max Payne and Alex Casey and Sam Lake and that face and whatever in Alan Wake 2. I think that's what Max Payne will literally look like. Yeah. I think it's literally going to be a Sam Lake scan at this point, because they, like I said, they do a lot of stuff with that detective character in Alan Wake 2. But it's a weird thing as well, because Max Payne 2 had that weird other guy scanned in to be like a different face.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you just kind of reset and do something else. But yeah, overall, this has been the Title Partner Podcast, the UBP, the UBP,
the UBP.
A sickeningly full UBP. Yeah. I've been Scott Taylor, that's been Jules Gill.
I have indeed. Thank you so much for having me, and I hope that everyone listening has a fantastic Christmas and a very Merry New Year.
Yeah, Merry Christmas and a Happy Holidays to all. Hopefully you all get, what do you call it, healed, cleaned up, I was going to say. Yeah. Get healed up across the holidays. Have a lovely time. Thank you all very much for listening, and we'll catch you very soon. Goodbye.
Bye, everyone.
So ill.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.